Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Wednesday, October 23rd, 2024. The MLS Cup playoffs are here. Colorado Rapids have hired Alex Aldridge, formerly of Millwall FC, as the new director of scouting to replace the departed Chris Zitterbart. Danny Wilson, the Scottish Salmon, has signed a sweetheart deal with his hometown club, Livingston FC, and the 258th edition of El Clásico is this weekend. Ay, que rico. Joining me now from underneath the suka to talk about playoffs. Playoffs? Rabbi Mark Goodman, do you want to talk about playoffs?
Let's get it on. It's very exciting. I wrote a Holding the High Line Substack where a couple people were coming after me because I was like, because they were like, oh, it's catastrophe. We made the playoffs. What kind of catastrophe is it to make the playoffs? Which is a great point that, like, you know, at the beginning of the season, I had my fingers crossed. I thought we were going to finish in seventh. You know, finishing in seventh is a great place to be, and I'm really happy about it. It wasn't a great end of the season, but we'll talk about that down the road. So, Matt, the first couple things you mentioned, though, those were good cuts. On the soccer information, knowing about the latest landings of Scottish Salmon, how did you uncover that detail about Danny Wilson?
It was Judgmental Jim, actually, friend of the show, Highliner, who actually messaged me about it, and then I saw Livingston put some stuff out, and he was in the squad for their game on the weekend, Mark, I believe.
What division is Livingston in?
Livingston is in the Scottish Championship. Oh, they were
top league, right?
Or there's the Scottish Premiership, which is the
second division in Scotland.
Yeah. They were relegated last year, but you compare that to Danny Wilson going from Queen's Park, which were staving off relegation, which Danny Wilson contributed to that for his short-term contract there, to now joining a team that just got relegated, that's had a really good start to the season, that I don't know if they're a favorite to go up from the Championship to the SPL, but they're certainly a contender for that. And on top of that, for Danny Wilson to go back home, maybe there's a similar theme here, Mark, to Jack Price getting to suit up for Shrewsbury Town, who he would have supported growing up. Danny was never, I think, formally a part of Livingston's setup, at least according to his transfer market details and at least some of the other bios that I've seen the Rapids put out as well. The main thing that they talk about is his first being in an organized club setup would have been with the U19s as a 16-year-old when he would have joined Rangers at a very young age. So then he was Rangers, and then Liverpool was in there. He went back to Rangers, and then Colorado. You all know the rest at this point. So I don't know that formally he was ever a Livingston player in the same way, Mark, that Jack Price, I don't think, was ever a Shrewsbury Town player other than maybe as a mascot when he was 12 years old. He was very quickly put into the Wolves Academy system and then was there for the better part of a decade. But good on Danny Wilson. Glad to see him land in a spot. And who knows, Mark, maybe those are going to be a Scottish Cup matchup between Livingston and Motherwell so that we can see Sam Nicholson cut inside on third center back Danny Wilson, and they're going to go up against each other. That'd be a fun thing from a Rapids standpoint. I'd bet on Sam Nicholson to beat Danny Wilson, Mark, but then probably shoot wide or shoot at the goalkeeper. So maybe a Jonathan Lewis versus a Lal Sabubakar like situation. Mark, what did we think of the Colorado Rapids signing a new director of scouting, Alex Aldridge, who we know, has most of his experience is in the English Championship. And this matches, I think, an increasing trend we've seen from the Rapids in terms of diversifying the soccer background and the geographical history of the people who they've added. They had a Portuguese scout, Gabriel Pinto, who was a part, not that this worked out, but he was part of the recruitment for one Sydney Tavares. They have a Scandinavian guy on the physio staff who actually worked at Bromby with Andreas Maxu. So this is somebody in the English ranks who knows about the championship. Mark, we can think of a few players from the English Championship and League One who have come to one Colorado Rapids and been successful. And it's a guy who maybe is looking at MLS with some fresh eyes, who's going to look at things from an international perspective. What do we make of this, Mark? And how excited are you for whatever Alex is bringing from a Millwall perspective to come on? Not that this is going to turn into Football Factory or Green Street Hooligans.
As long as he embraces advanced metrics, I think it's a good thing. And my assumption would be, based on Porik and based on Fran Taylor, the sporting director, that he does embrace analytics. You know, the the old school, you know, he's a good body player, he's athletic, he's got good technical ability. Those scouting abilities and understandings are still valuable and always will be. However, the ability to look at their advanced data, at their I think it's called Sport Track. It's the for lack of a better term, the bra they wear with the digital counter on it that tells you all the motion that a player will go on, both in practice and in a game. The ability to analyze that data and discern important information out of it is really critical. You know, the thing that's really interesting about scouting and advanced analytics, and I talked to Fran about this many years ago, and I was like, is your job to look at advanced statistics on our players and figure out what it means, look at opposing players and look at what it means, or to look at potential future players and look at what it means? And his answer was, yes, right, exactly. And so that's one of the challenges of scouting, which is the job never ends, right? You could just scout the opponents, or you could just scout our own players and see what deficiencies they need to work on with their coaches. And then, of course, you can scout. Mostly scouting is looking at players that you might want to bring into the club. And that's really hard because it's a global game. You know, this is not baseball where you go to American high schools and you go to the Dominican Republic and you're done. it's a lot more in-depth and complicated. You know, I think there are so many intangibles with regard to scouts. Really an advanced tactical understanding of like how the coach wants to set up, advanced statistical understanding about how modern metrics and advanced metrics can be applied, the ability to start, like, you know, the Rapids, as they've talked about with us, although not too explicitly, have some proprietary numbers that they've come up with. They have a formula. They have the one ring to rule it all formula at each position that says this is what we want our players to be able to do. And we put all these advanced numbers from, you know, Opta and other places into our number, and it shows us which players we want to go out and get. Hopefully he can embrace that, and hopefully he can kind of like look at a player and say, oh, this guy, you know, has real technical ability, real physical ability that we really want to attract and we want to bring into the team. And so I didn't say anything about what I know about this guy because I don't know anything mm-hmm. about this guy. So I'm just kind of like trying to riff on what it is we want Alex to be able to do. And I wish him well. I think this will be great. And I hope he gets his frequent flyer miles out and he racks up enough that he can take him and the missus to Tahiti somewhere down the road, because, you know, he's got to fly a lot. He's got to go see a lot of players. He's got to be willing to go anywhere, anytime, day or night to bring in the right guys to get this team to MLS championship, because we're not going to do it on just opening the wallet. That's not how KSC rolls. We're going to do it with some smart pickups, some bargain basement hunts, and some homegrowns. And that's how the Rapids get it done.
If we just compare his pedigree, Mark, or if we judge the performance of the individual based on the success of the clubs that he would have been at previously, Mark, I know you're probably not paying attention to Millwall a whole lot, but obviously Fulham was a yo-yo team for a couple of years there. So, you know, we had two games against Millwall every 2 years that was usually a comfortable home win, playing some attractive football at the Cottage, and then a bit of a rough visit to the Den occasionally, going slightly east into London. But if I just look at what Millwall's been as a club as well, for the most part, like, really a little bit blue collar, really workmanlike. They have to have good athletes that also play soccer. And typically, if you compare where they finish in the table compared to where they are spending wise in the recent stint that they've had in the English second division, they've mostly been in the bottom third in terms of net spend or the FFP, the various metrics, at least that we have publicly or that are estimated by whatever the London equivalent of Forbes, you know, sports coverage is as well. And then for the most part, they've been mid-table. They had, I think, one or two scares while he was at the club in terms of with relegation. And they've even had a couple seasons where they finished upper mid-table. And in the final, you know, couple weeks of the season have even been within striking distance of, you know, of getting into the playoffs. So if nothing else, he's coming from a club where they have lofty goals of what they want to try to achieve, and they have to try to do that on a budget, and they have to be creative about how they do that on a budget. That is a really, really good starting point in terms of comparing being in the English Championship and the drunk bar fight and the vitriol that comes from all of that to coming to MLS and trying to be competitive. And as Porrick Smith has said a million times, become a perennial playoff team, which the Rapids are not yet, and bring a second MLS Cup back to Colorado. Mark, we've got two other banter topics that I want to touch on. One that's a little bit outdated since, it happened on Saturday. But so, listeners, as you may be aware, there's an expanded version of the Club World Cup is coming next year. And that's including so much expansion that it's not just the teams that are participating in the continental equivalent of Champions League that are taking place. The United States will be hosting it next summer. And so there was a question of what MLS teams, if any, were going to be invited and included to participate in the Club World Cup and how that was actually going to happen. And from the various reportings that have come out, we have it on pretty good authority that basically MLS, rather than assigning it to a competitive outcome, decided to leave it up to FIFA. And Gianni Infantino, in all of his wonderful hypocrisy and corruption, was present at Inter Miami's home game on decision day, where they came back and Messi scored a hat trick off of just playing a second half against New England Revolution. They set a new points record. They won the Supporter Shield, and Infantino announced that Inter Miami was going to be in the Club World Cup and they were going to host the opening game in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium. That's the Dolphins stadium. So rather than being at where Inter Miami normally plays their games, they're in a big NFL stadium that seats 70,000 people. MLS Mark earlier this week also announced that Seattle Sounders are also being included. Tom Bogert had for me what I think was a cringy stretching of the truth, or at least poor choice of words journalistically, Mark, where he tweeted out on Twitter, on X, that that Inter Miami had qualified for the Club World Cup. And it's okay if they qualified for it. Why hasn't anyone, either MLS, Don Garber, Gianni Infantino, FIFA, the Club World Cup representatives, at no point has anybody actually said Inter Miami is in the Club World Cup because they won the Supporters Shield? So there's a bunch of people who are upset about this, albeit most of them, Mark, are based in Columbus, Ohio, where you have the defending MLS Cup champion, the defending Leagues Cup champion, a team that very well could go on to win MLS Cup in the next 5 weeks, claiming that then, okay, if they qualified, what was the criteria? And if it wasn't, then effectively you just leaved it up for a bit of a cash grab in that regard. And that was virtually confirmed for me, Mark, when they announced that Seattle Sounders is getting it. When Seattle hasn't won anything, they didn't even win the Cascadia Cup this year. And I don't think that they are going to win MLS Cup. Mark, what do we make of this? How annoying is this given the Messification of MLS to where now MLS is now Messi League Soccer? How frustrating is it that we're focusing more on big markets? It's a very Super League approach to the competition. It removes the meritocracy. Do you even care because the Club World Cup is the bastard gingered stepchild of the stupid soccer tournaments that exist in this sport?
So they did expand the Club World Cup, so it's less dumb than it used to be. So the Club World Cup used to be awful. I mean, it was basically in the middle of December or January, some teams would fly to Qatar or Japan, and the African champion and two Asian champions and the Oceania champion would play each other for the rights to get absolutely housed by either the South American or the European champions. En route to Real Madrid winning the tournament. I mean, like, there was like no point. There was like no point to any of it. And all the games would happen at like 1 o'clock in the morning US time. Like, none of it made any sense. So the new expansion takes it to, I think, 16 teams instead of like what I think it used to be, 8 or like 10 with a funny, like, kind of play in bracket system. And I don't know the format of who's going to play who. I think they're 3 team. Maybe there's 24 teams or 18 teams, and they're playing in 3-team groups or something like that, so they get 2 matches. The games will take place at domestic U.S. Stadia all over, and some are, like, some pretty cool places, but none of them are close to where I live, so that's okay. One's in Cincinnati. I think they're playing in Philly. There's one in D.C. A lot of really cool teams are in it. A lot of the best European teams are in it. I remember the South African team was a team that I'd never heard of. That's one of the African teams that's in there. There's a Moroccan team that's pretty well known called, I want to say Wyclef, but it's not Wyclef. It's like Wyvern or something like that. Anyways, And then the South American representatives are exactly who you want them to be. It's Boca and it's River. I mean, I think it's funny. Matt's like, how do you know so much about this? Why are you so prepared? Are you looking at the Wikipedia on this? I'm like, it's a funny story. Actually, I took Iggy for a haircut yesterday, and the haircut guy is a Moroccan dude, and he just loves football. And whenever we go in, we talk football for like 30 minutes. And
yes.
We talked about the World Cup, the Club World Cup for like a while. And I mean, you know, here's my take. I think it's a bit of a travesty that Columbus didn't get in. I think I understand why you'd put Seattle in. And I definitely understand why you put Inter Miami in. I think that the hubbub that Tom Bogert laid out was basically that, like, you kind of arbitrarily decided that there's a Supporters Shield champ and a MLS Cup champ, and you could pick between the two, and one of those teams has Messi and the other doesn't. And so obviously you went with the team that has Messi, but you did it after the fact. And so there's some legitimacy and some like, is this above board kind of issues around this. I think I'm okay with it, mostly because the fact that, like, it's the Club World Cup and you don't really care that much. You know, it's an opportunity. It's a little bit of an alternate version of Cash Grab FC. Like, it's just an opportunity for some of these venues and some of these teams to make a little money, to get some eyeballs on them. You know, I think the revised timing of the event is good too. I think doing it in December is like a terrible time for everybody. So moving it, I think it's in the summer this year. Yeah, it's going to be in
June 15th to July 13th. And there are 32 teams from the six.
32, concert. Right. So, and I think that those are all improvements. I think also, like, what you're basically doing is you're reinventing ICC, which is the International Champions Cup. But you're doing it with a little bit of integrity. Having gone to a Cash Grab FC match with Liverpool over the summer, I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. I wrote a bunch of articles about it. I said it was awesome. I was all in for it. You know, teams need tune-ups. They need to rotate players. They need to, like, get their young guys in there. This is a great opportunity for all that. So doing it in the United States is fantastic. It's way better than having it in the middle of the night in Qatar. So, it's fine. I'm not super concerned about who wins this. I think it's been really weird that, like, MLS has often promoted, you know, the winner of CONCACAF Champions League in all the broadcasts and stuff. You know what I'm going to say, Matt. And the winner of this game goes to the FIFA Club World Cup. And I was like, who cares? The coolest thing about winning CONCACAF Champions League is winning CONCACAF Champions League, right? Like, that's quite a remarkable achievement that you went to Central America, you played some really difficult away games, you grinded out a full season, you know, in your own league, and then you also, you know, beat one or two Mexican teams on your way to winning CONCACAF. Like, I think there's no higher, personally, in the order of club football championships I'd want to win. It goes UEFA Champions League, UEFA Europa League, and then shortly below that, CONCACAF Champions League. Like, those are the three cups that I'd want the most. So, FIFA Club World Cup does not rank in the top 10 for me, or 8 or whatever, but, you know, that's cool. It'll be fun when it happens, and if I can get a ticket to a match, I'll probably go, and I'll bring Iggy. Although, that's money that I could have spent on the actual World Cup in 2026, so we'll see.
The Club World Cup is still dumb. I look forward to ignoring it just as much as I was ignoring it previously.
I love it.
Mark, other thing that we have, Kroenke Sports and Entertainment came out with some new renderings, plans that they have for the area around Ball Arena, what I still refer to as Pepsi Center or the Can, as the old kids watching the Avs in 2001 would refer to it. Mark, in any case, downtown arena where the Nuggets and the Avalanche play, Elitch Gardens is right there, Mark. There's a lot of parking that services the downtown area and the events taking place at the arena, and KSC has come out with some new renderings and some plans to create their own stadium arena district. We have seen this in various areas. Mark, you and I being baseball people would say that what the what the Braves have in Atlanta at the new Battery area has been really, really good. McGregor Square has been a good thing for the Colorado Rockies. Granted, the Rockies don't have a whole lot else going for them right now. And so the Avs and the Nuggets are getting that. There's going to be some housing. There's going to be some commercial, some retail, maybe some office space as well. I've saw a few reports, albeit this is starting a few years ago when they were talking about what happens post Elitch Gardens when Elitch Gardens moves up north, that some of that was also going to include some low income or some affordable housing. That's something that we need in the greater Denver metro area. Mark, we are not an Avs or a Nuggets platform, certainly, but from a Rapids perspective, this is brought up that we have, oh, here's all this renderings and these plans for what they're going to do when Elitch Gardens isn't even closed and hasn't even been knocked down yet. And yet, we do not have any, at least publicly posted, publicly acknowledged official updates on Victory Crossing. Mark, our thoughts on this? Do we even care? I feel like you and I have both made our peace in terms of what it means from a Victory Crossing standpoint. And then I'll let you talk. And then I have one little tidbit about what we could actually be seeing from a stadium standpoint in the not too distant future.
I was shocked at this little revelation. I'm not opposed to the idea of the Rapids relocating to Elitch Gardens, the current facility of Elitch Gardens. I'm just not like expecting it. I just don't think
this is not part of that, Mark.
No, I know, clear. I know. But like, that's why people get upset. They're like, we should have a downtown stadium. I'm like, that's never gonna happen. It's never gonna happen. Just get over it. Move on from it. It's a really nice pipe dream. There are some really good benefits to being out in Commerce City. The main benefits are you're surrounded by other soccer fields, and the city of Denver is growing out in that direction, and affordable middle-class housing is moving in that direction. And therefore, there's going to be a lot of people out there who want to, like, go to a soccer game, and it's not so far away. Like, a ton of people are moving to Aurora, and going to Commerce City from Aurora is a lot faster than going to downtown from Aurora. I mean, maybe I'm overstating this as a person who is formerly of the city of Denver, and Matt, you can disagree with me, you know, roundly, but like, I think Commerce City's fine. The point that folks are making, which is legitimate, is how dare KSC spend a lot of money improving facilities and the game day experience for basketball and hockey fans when the soccer fans really deserve a massively upgraded stadium. And the answer to that is, yes, we do. That would be great. I want to go out to DSGP next time and have it be like a shining gem. You know, we're slowly falling behind the rest of the league we're already in basically the bottom tier, I think, of MLS stadiums. We're in danger of falling into like the bottom three or bottom five stadiums. I don't think we're there yet. I think there's definitely some worse stadiums out there. I think Red Bull is still, mostly because they can't fill it, but also because it's in New Jersey.
It's a nice arena. Getting there, not super great.
I mean, Yankee Stadium is there, but that was always supposed to be temporary. Inter Miami Stadium is probably there, but they're leaving. You know, like there's a lot of stadiums out there that are not ideal, but honestly, you know, Matt, having been out to the Dignity Health Park stadium this last year, I had a good experience. I liked it. It's bigger than DSGP, but it's about equal. I mean, it's not a great experience all around. The tailgating situation for the hardcore fans is not great. The food amenities are a little bit better, but like the sight lines, the walking experience, like, it's not that much better. And San Jose also, which I went to this year, only marginally better. Like, it's a little better, but not a lot better.
And how much of San Jose is because it's newer, Mark? You know, that stadium's what, 2017, 2018? You compare that to a stadium, you know, that's going to be 20, that's going to be 20 in a couple years.
The only stadium I've been to that was like, I mean, LAFC was like head and shoulders above and it was gorgeous. And Columbus was like head and shoulders above. It was amazing. But Cincinnati was like, it was good. It was an improvement over DSGP, but it wasn't amazing. Like, it wasn't, the Cincinnati stadium was like, it needed some love and some, it wasn't like, didn't have all the cool bells and whistles. So, DSGP needs some expansion. It needs to be bumped up to like 20, 22, 23, It needs some really nice luxury amenities beyond the suites. But you know, like that investment needs to be made, and Victory Crossing would be a great solution to that problem. But I don't think you or I ever expect that to happen.
Yeah, no. I should say, Mark, we are recording right now as Portland Timbers and Vancouver Whitecaps are playing in the wild card game. And the only reason why I bring that up is because Vancouver is the higher seed. They are the 8th seed and Portland is the 9th seed. But this game, Mark, is actually taking place at Providence Park in Portland, Oregon,
because controversy.
Because BC Place was unavailable because they had pre-scheduled, I guess, months, maybe even a year ago, that Supercross was going to be at BC Place. Now, Supercross,
the motorcycles?
Yeah, like motorcycles on a dirt track in a stadium.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's funny because, like, I read the article that, like, it's unavailable, but nowhere in the article did they say what that had been booked there. And now I found out it's dirt bikes?
Yeah,
it's dirt bikes. That's kind of embarrassing.
So I should say, listeners, there are plenty of times in which it's where, just like how Mark was pointing out, that there are some benefits for the Rapids being where they are. There are certain benefits to the Rapids having their own, albeit smaller and slightly neglected stadium, if first and foremost ownership makes sure that that stadium is for them, right? And so if nothing else, other than Mark, you could argue maybe Labor Day weekend when Fish comes in and has their jam band concert or whatever. And even then, I don't know that I mind having a 3-day weekend at the end of summer, Mark, that I know for sure the Rapids aren't playing at home, so I can plan something else or I can be out of town. I've gone to Michigan and watched that Rapids game from the cabin next to the lake that my mom grew up on. So that there's certain benefits to that, but if nothing else, Dick's Sporting Goods Park is there first and foremost for the Rapids rather than as a mechanism for ownership to make money, and that's the side component of it. So the fact that the Vancouver Whitecaps have to share that venue with the Canadian football team, the BC Lions, question mark, and then also it's used for other things that could sometime impede the progress of one Vancouver Whitecaps by having a home playoff game rather than a road playoff game. There's some certain benefits to that. So I think that's worth pointing out. All right. Enough bantering, Mark. Shall we actually talk about Colorado Rapids soccer that took place on the field?
Let's talk about the unfortunate incident that occurred against Austin the other day.
Yes. Listeners, this past Saturday, Decision Day 2024, was a series of unfortunate events for the Colorado Rapids, who went in to the Treehouse Q2 Stadium in Austin, Texas, and lost by a score of 3-2. Adam Beaudry made his MLS debut, Mark, as Zach Steffen was unavailable for this game. I don't know that there's a whole lot of points in terms of us breaking down this game tactically, Mark, given what happened in the 8th minute that kind of ruined the game plan for the Colorado Rapids. In any case, listeners, PK goal scored by Sebastian Driussi in the 8th minute, and then Rafael Navajo followed that up to make it 1-1 before halftime. Omer Fernandez draws and then converts a penalty. His first goal, Mark, since the game on the Sunday after 4th of July. So July 7th was the last time Omer Fernandez scored in league play for the Colorado Rapids. He scores that penalty in the 75th to make it 2-1 to the Pids. And then after that, Austin pours it on and gets goals in stoppage time. Ethan Finley on an open header between Sam Vines and Andreas Maxu. And then Brandon Hines-Eich, I believe it is, in the 3rd minute of stoppage time, just completely beating Andreas Maxu to that ball as well. Mark, I would say both halves were games in which the Rapids, I think, started a little bit slow, but then grew into the half. And if we take away stoppage time, they were effectively the same half, where it was Austin getting a really good start, Colorado getting control of the game, and then gradually getting more creative and better in attacking, better pressing, better possession of the ball, and then ultimately having that lead to a goal later on in the half, respectively. But Mark, I'm not sure that the result mattered a whole lot, because in the 7th minute, in the play that led up to the penalty conceded by Connor Ronan against former Colorado Rapids striker Diego Rubio, you had Sebastian Driussi and Georgi Mihailovic go in for a ball, and you saw Georgi's ankle turn, and he now has a sprained ankle that, for me, Mark, we'll talk about this a little bit later, I'm not confident that he is playing on Saturday for leg one against the Galaxy, and I wouldn't hold your breath on leg two, but we'll get to that when we get to that. So in any case, Mark, an injury for the Rapids, a debut for the Rapids, Adam Beaudry, who looked the part, but I think give any one of those three goals conceded to Zach Steffen, and Zach Steffen probably saves one of those. And fundamentally, Mark, this was a failure in that the Rapids failed to get a result against a bad Austin team. And then you coupled that with Minnesota getting a result and Houston getting a result to where the Rapids dropped down from 6th to 7th. And this was almost, Mark, I would say, you know, you called it a catastrophe in Backpass, which we'll link to in the show notes. This was almost a, like, idealized disaster. The only thing that really prevented that, Mark, was the poop housing referee in Houston giving a few more minutes of stoppage time so that Houston could score a goal so that LAFC could win the West. Otherwise, Mark, we were looking at a game at the bank on Saturday, and probably, I think we all agreed, Mark, regardless of who you wanted the Rapids to play in the first round, of the four top four teams you absolutely didn't want was LAFC. So dropping in the standings, bad. Four losses to finish out the regular season, bad. Georgi Mihailovic potentially doubtful for the playoffs, getting a mostly good performance, good 90 minutes. It needed to be a good 95 minutes. Mark, I'll throw this to you. Rabbi's choice, good, bad, or big?
Boy, there wasn't a lot of good in this game, but I guess... what was good about this game? Well, Adam Beaudry's
debut... Kevin Cabral coming off the bench and... That was good! Himself.
Yeah, I was going to say Adam Beaudry's debut was decent. I would say he was good until the final save that he didn't make. He parried a ball that wound up in the back of the net because he didn't get enough on it, and I think Zach Steffen saves that, which means we end that game 2-2, which wouldn't have mattered. We'd still be in seventh place, which is interesting. So that's why I guess I'm a little bit forgiving of the kid. Other than that, it was not a great game all around for the Rapids. Omir Fernandez stepping in. I guess the other good thing was Omir Fernandez stepping in. He was, the opportunity that he got, that ultimately led to a goal was really, really great. So that was good. We'll move to the bad. I think possession here was a real problem. I mean, the team just looks totally different without Cole Basket running and getting into spots and making moves, and then they really, really don't look the same without Georgi Mihailovic. I mean, there's just nobody pulling the strings and making the runs, and so this team was basically kind of like lumping it forward and hoping that something would come out, and that's really kind of a challenge for this team. It was really interesting also to see without Mihailovic or Bassett the role that Navajo plays in kind of like being the direct recipient. So there were like a lot of plays where like Lalo Sabubakar or Andreas Maxo was like, would like show out and like would kind of come in. And then Hafa would kind of break between the second and the final line. And Maxo would like serve up the ball right to him, which means like the midfield of the Rapids was just getting cut out altogether. We haven't seen stuff like that in a really long time. Like, that was Anthony Hudson type stuff. That was like, you know, if you want to go way back, that was Pablo Mastroeni. Like, used to love skipping that second line. Now, all managers do it. All managers go long ball, short ball, long ball in terms of moving the ball from the back line to the midfield and then up to the front line. And then, you know, in order to keep the back line honest, like dropping those long passes in and behind the defenders in order to like open up space inside for the midfielders on subsequent plays. But like, there was just a lot of that in this game. I'll just say the bad thing using numbers in the first half, the Colorado Rapids, this game, the first half ended 1-1. The Rapids had 29% possession to Austin's 71% possession. That's 288 passes for Austin to the Colorado Rapids, 111. It was better in the second half, but not a lot. They went into Austin and it just absolutely, I don't know what they were doing. Were they like on the back foot? Was Austin bossing the game? Did they plan on kind of defending and conceding possession? I didn't really understand what was going on there. I get going into an opposing stadium and like playing defense, but like 29% possession, that's awful. Like, you've got to string together passes a little bit better than that. And that put them behind. And then in the second half, they did very similar job. They had better possession, but they ultimately, and then, you know, we'll talk when I really talk about big thing about like the final collapse for two goals in the final 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah. So a couple of things there, Mark. I'll start with piggybacking off of your point of, I think the team, we have to start with the fact that they had a game plan and then Georgie goes down in the seventh minute. And obviously, you know, you losing your most important attacking player from that, you know, immediately throws a spanner in the works. That is not a good situation to be in. And emotionally, you probably have to recover from that because not only does Georgie go down, but he's holding his face. He's visually indicating that it's not a particularly good injury. And then he has to be stretchered off as well. You're wondering whether or not he's back for the season. Like I had a call from someone from the club for not reporting reasons or whatever, Mark. But normally when I get a call that's at a weird time or that I'm not expecting, I assume there's some breaking news that we don't know about. And I was fully expecting to be like, hey, Matt, Georgie's ankle had to be amputated and he's out for the next year. Guaranteed. He's going to have surgery for it. That's emotionally what I was expecting it. Maybe that's the malaria pill dream still kind of affecting me, Mark, even though I've been back from Tanzania for almost 5 weeks now. But so it ended up not being that. It was a very innocuous call and a good thing for stuff that we did today at training with the playoff preview press conference. But so, yeah, like I wasn't sure what to make of that. So understandably, I think the game plan had to be completely reworked on the fly as you just conceded the first goal of the game with your star attacker being out on top of having Kevin Cabral off the bench, not starting to be able to do route one stuff to somebody other than Rafael Navajo. And on top of that, not having Cole Bassett to be the link up play from defending in the middle third to then attacking in the final third. But to your point there, Mark, the pressing happened and happened in weird ways that was effective. And I don't know that we've seen it. We've seen this wrinkle before. I don't know that we've seen it as direct. Maybe this was a result of not having those three players that I just talked about. But the goal that was scored, Mark, was off of Lal Sububakar pinching into the midfield, getting up on Sebastian Driussi, winning the ball, and then just toe poking it 10 yards forward to Rafael Navajo, who just takes it straight up the middle to actually score the goal. So I think that was Lawless's first goal contribution of the year as well, Mark, having the primary assist to Hafa. But I'll point out one other thing for Rafael Navajo as well, Mark. With that was his 15th goal of the season that he scored. And then obviously they drew the penalty, which presumably, Mark, no Cole, no Georgie on the field. You would give that to Hafa even with him having a couple misses, right? He leaves it to Omir. Omir ends up converting it really, really well taken. But had Hafa taken that and scored, that would have been his 16th goal of the season, and he would have tied Connor Casey from 2009 and Diego Rubio for 2022 for the most goals in a single season for the Rapids with 16. And instead, he chose to leave it to Amir, who's been on a bit of a slump, who I think did a good job, Mark, in terms of 7 minutes in, oh, our central attacker isn't available. We're going to sub on Calvin Harris. Omir, you move inside. And he played the 10 at times for Red Bulls, but you know, he's been a wide player for the Rapids. So this is something that he hasn't done a whole lot of, Mark. And on top of being in the situation they were in as well. And I thought he did an okay job from a pressing standpoint and from a what they were trying to do in transition. Certainly from a possession standpoint, I don't think Omir is a net negative for that relative to Georgi Mihailovic, but I think everybody on the team other than Cole Bassett would be that as well. So there were some positives in that regard, but I guess we'll transition this, Mark, to then your big thing as well. All of this was in the context of they were in a great position to just finish sixth, or when at the time Houston was actually drawing LA Galaxy, even move up to fifth, and then it all came crashing down, and then that leads to the performance and then the results on top of how we're looking at this in the macro with the final month of the season, to where we're feeling negative even though they want to focus on the positives of what they did in the 90 minutes. So with that, Mark, I'll leave it to you. Stoppage time. Two goals conceded.
Yeah, that was very worrisome. This back line in the post-Moyes Bombito era just hasn't been as effective. In back pass, in the holding the Highline Substack, I wrote a lot more about how losing Cole Bassett really affects all things. Possession, the ability to drive opposing teams far back into their own zone, the ability to chase players in the midfield and then create chaos that makes the opposing team struggle offensively. So Cole Bassett, by being a good offensive piece, is beneficial to the Colorado Rapids defense. That's a, like, maybe it's a stretch, but it was a thought that I had. But you know, I am the idea for the article and using the word catastrophe going into the playoffs is not that this game was a catastrophe. It's that the Rapids have lost 4 of the last 5 games and have not been convincing in any of them and have been really, really rough. And so that's really what is the problem, which is that they're slumping at the wrong time of the season. And more importantly than that, and fundamentally, is they've just got a ton of injuries, right? And critical injuries. Cole Bassett being down, Zach Steffen being down, Georgi Mihailovic being down. Those are all really, really concerning. If we could get all three of them back for the first round of the playoffs, then I'd feel better, but I still wouldn't feel great about going into a match against the LA Galaxy, who, as we talked about last week on the pod, was a team that I did not want to face, and you did not want to face either. We wanted Seattle, we wanted RSL, we didn't get them. So that leads to some challenges going into the next round, and we will confront them, and you never know.
Yeah, so to your point as well, Mark, I would also say while some of the games have been different, and I think certainly the team raised the level of energy and intensity coming off the Minnesota loss and the Sporting Kansas City loss. You know, the performances against Galaxy and against Seattle were much, much better from the run of play. The advanced metrics were better as well. But Mark, even with, you know, coming up in a road game and a slightly defensive posture that the Rapids had, on top of maybe being a little bit more defensive than anticipated, once Georgi goes down, the fact that you then get the 2-goal lead and then concede, this team still has a really bad 10 minutes in them. And Mark, I could see a scenario where, I won't say this so much about the Galaxy, I think it's a really easy it's really easy dots to connect if we're looking at like LAFC, where the Rapids could be great for 70 of the 90 or 70 of the 100 with how much stoppage time we're getting now in the modern game. The players like to refer to it as putting in a full 100-minute performance rather than a 90-minute performance. The Rapids could be the better team 60-65% in terms of like how much they're dominating LAFC over those 80-85 minutes, and in those 10 minutes they could single-handedly lose the tie against these quality teams that you're going to play in the playoffs. And the fact that you're doing that to Austin, who, you know, didn't have anything to play for, it was a it was a dead rubber game, Mark, with an interim head coach, and who knows what the roster is going to look like. Is Diego Rubio on this team next year? Do they cash in on Sebastian Driussi? I'm not entirely sure. And so that is a worrying, more so than as much as we have questions about the injuries, as much as we are concerned about the team having fatigue, even though, you know, they're going to have a full week off between games. It's Saturday, Friday, Saturday, if we get to a third leg as well, that, you know, this, that there's underlying concerns that now, if we've seen it for 4 games in a row against mostly playoff teams, that's something that needs to be confronted, as you said, or that's something that we are going to be suspicious of until they prove us otherwise. So, Mark, you and I will happily be Monday morning center backs next week when the Rapids go in and do exactly what they did against Austin, maybe with Cole Bassett back, maybe with Kevin Cabral and Zach Steffen back, and get a 2-1 win and see out that stoppage time period where they're under the cosh like they were in that stadium against Club America, but don't concede a goal. We will happily hold our hands up and admit we are wrong, and Chris Sarmis is a genius and knows way more about soccer than we do. But until then, Mark, we are going to be inherently suspicious. So last thing I want to say on this, Mark, I will highlight the article that Matt Doyle wrote for MLSsoccer.com. Link will be in the show notes. And he came out with his playoff tiers, and he had a really good paragraph, Mark, on the Rapids and just kind of big picture what he's seen. And so Matt Doyle's seeing something, Mark, that he's just now writing about that you and I have been thinking for a couple months. Chances are we're right here. So here's Doyle saying, quote, but this team plays open, fast-paced soccer that risks leaving space behind. And with the summertime sale of Moise Bombito, they don't have an all-around, all-world athlete back there to run opponents down in the open field. They also don't have a reliable goal scorer coming off the wing. We could say Kevin Cabral maybe fills that. And Cole Bassett missed the past month with an injury. And then Georgi was stretchered off on decision day with one of the nastiest looking ankle sprains of the year. It's too much. And on how they'll be on the road for most of their playoff journey, I'm not expecting Colorado to duplicate their League's Cup run. So there's that. Okay. Mark, anything else that we want to say specifically about Austin or specifically about the decision day, or do we want to move on?
Moving on.
Rapids fans, I want to take a break to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Magic Mind. Magic Mind is the world's first performance mental shot. Mark and I have been taking them for the past couple of days. We were taking them before the last couple podcast sessions as well. It's helped us calm down. It's kept us focused, and it's really helped me, particularly with my brain fog. Hopefully, we seem at least a little bit more on topic, or at the very least, less non-linear thinking, which can get annoying for some of you, I'm sure. Magic Mind has a bunch of really good vitamins and superfoods, which can help you with your mood and stress. It's like a little 2-ounce greens powder shot of goodness that helps you with your deep focus or get your workday back on track. As someone who's really, really caffeine sensitive, I haven't had any jitters or anything like that. So rather than just going to coffee, Magic Mind's been a good alternative. They spent 10 years working on their formula and doing a whole bunch of research. I've been taking it for a week now, and I can really see a difference in the quality and in my own personal performance. Give Magic Mind a try. You can visit the link and details in the show notes. And when you check out, use the discount code Highliner20, Highliner20, all caps, and that'll get you 20% off your first-time order or 48% off a first-time subscription order. Mark, what has been your experience with Magic Mind?
I took it a couple of weeks ago, like 2 weeks in a row on like a day that I needed to get up for work and get some stuff done. So I like had a cup of coffee and then I added a Magic Mind and it kind of felt tingly and yummy. And it was a little bit more like kind of like a mellow kind of ease into the morning as opposed to like the coffee, which kind of shoots you like way high up. And then you kind of like slowly taper down, like brought me to a gradual kind of peak and gave me a little bit of that kind of like overall energetic boost that isn't just kind of like a wake up in the morning. So it was like a solid kind of all around feeling. And, you know, there's a bunch of extra like vitamins and nutrients in there that I'm not a doctor. I can't make any claims to, but they can't hurt you. They seem to be like a good thing for you. So I enjoyed it. I recommend it. Give it a try.
Listeners, this coming Saturday, October 26th, the Colorado Rapids are the late night game. MLS After Dark will be coming to Carson, California, when the Colorado Rapids head to Dignity Health Sports Park for just a small matter of the first leg of a possible 3 in the round of 16. Colorado Rapids versus LA Galaxy, 9 p.m. Mountain Time. Mark, that's 11 p.m. for you. Rabbi, are you staying up till 1 a.m. to watch the Rapids in the playoffs, you sicko?
I will either do that or I'll wake up at 6 in the morning to watch the replay and it'll be almost the same thing.
Okay, Mark, the Rapids played the LA Galaxy a couple weeks ago, so we don't need to talk a whole lot about their team. There's been not a whole lot of changes. I guess the one difference from that game that would have been at DSGP, Mark, was that Marco Royce was unavailable for that game and he's returned to the midfield mostly in a wide role in like a 4-3-3 working under Greg Vanney. So Marco Royce, the former Dortmund legend, German footballer, is going to be there, but they also have Gabriel Peck, who was a fantastic winger, Mark. I voted for him for newcomer of year. They have Ricky Pooch, who we're expecting to also be a best 11, really, really good, number 10, number 8. He scored some goals against the Colorado Rapids. That was not a fun experience as well. So that's what's going on with the LA Galaxy. Injury news. Mark, would you like to hear what I heard when I was at Burgundy Brunch earlier today?
Go.
I will put a link in the show notes, listeners. The press conference was actually live streamed from the club on multiple platforms. But so Chris Armas confirmed that they're expecting Cole Bassett, Kevin Cabral, and Zach Steffen to be available. On top of that, Mark, I was at training. Kevin Cabral practiced fully. He played, I think, at least 20 minutes against Austin. Cole Bassett was fully participating in training as well. Chris Armas said that he's been pain-free in the quad for about a week. That bodes well as well. And Zach Steffen was fully participating. The team did some practice simulated penalties as well. And Zach Steffen and Ethan Bandry were participating in that. So I would expect Zach Steffen's good to go. He should be starting. It won't be Adam Beaudry or Ethan Bandry in goal. Cole Bassett available and Kevin Cabral available. I'm not sure, Mark, whether or not we would think, I would doubt that either of those two field players are available for 90 minutes, but Kevin Cabral coming in and immediately making an impact in transition, could have scored a goal against Brad Stuver in his first 2 minutes on the field. I have to assume he's available for at least 45. I'm not so sure about Cole. He hasn't been doing a whole lot of training alongside the team in weeks past. And also it's a quad injury. That's kind of important if you're just saying, hey, no ball work, no contact drills, but like just do cardio in order to be fit. Cole's still a really fit player. I'm not entirely sure. If I had to guess, Mark, this is purely me speculating, no reporting internal information or anything. I think Cabral and Bassett are both available on the bench for the first leg, I think, but they will both be fit up to where Chris Armas would be comfortable starting them in the second leg back at home on Friday, November 1st. Do I think that both of them, by the time we get there, are going to be 90 minutes fit? I would say, Kevin, no. Mostly because there's other wide players that you could have sub in for him or have him see, be subbed on for. Cole Bassett probably could leg that out as well. But the big one, Mark, is Georgi Mihailovic, who was on the sideline for the entirety of training today. I did not, from the zoomed in photos I was able to take on my iPhone 13, I didn't see any wrap. I didn't see any ice. He wasn't in a boot. He was walking freely under his own power, no crutches or anything, but he was not training, Mark. It's still been described as a sprain. If we're going by what Dr. Google says, a grade one sprain is about a 1 to 3 week injury as well. So, Mark, I would be willing to bet when we get the injury report on Friday that he is listed as out. And he's probably day-to-day, or Chris Armas described him as day-to-day, and it's probably too soon to tell in terms of whether or not he's available for the second leg. But I'd be willing to bet no Georgi, certainly at all, in the game day squad for Saturday. Mark, your thoughts on these injuries, and what do these mean for the Colorado Rapids and our expectations just in the context of leg one?
Well, I feel like this Rapids team is really, really good with both Georgi and Cole on the field, and they're less effective without him. We did play most of Leagues Cup without Georgi Mihailovic because he was away, and so we had Cole Bassett instead. And so that
a part of Leagues Cup, the front end of Leagues Cup, Mark.
I said most.
I think he was there for more. That they played like 8 games in Leagues Cup. I think he was available for at least 5 of them.
I think he was available for 2 of them.
But no, because remember, Mark, because he came back because they got eliminated on the weekend in Paris, and then he came back and like played on jet lag to help Yapi score that goal against Toluca, I believe.
All right, so that means that they played. He played 4 with and 4 without, give or take.
I think it was 5 and 3. Any case,
all right. We're just you're terrible. we're not friends anymore. No, that's fine. But they're better. They're better with both of them. Without one of them, it's a little bit like Batman without Robin in the old school thing. I don't want to impugn either of these two gentlemen by saying which one's Batman and which one's Robin. But I definitely feel like that's probably the situation we're going into week one. If we can ride it out and get a result, that would be great, but I'm not optimistic about that feeling. So that means that hypothetically the Rapids would have to win at home in the second leg and then go back to Dignity and win the third game. That's the way that I'm kind of looking at it, which is like, it's hard to win that first game. You're kind of backs to the wall. So that's a very pessimistic way of looking at things, but that's the kind of my approach to things.
Just to be clear, listeners, for those of you who've been living under a rock, we are in the round of 16, just like how it was last year, is the new Frankenstein round one best of 3 series. So it's a 3-leg series, and we are not counting aggregate score or away goals or anything. This is just straight points accumulated and the actual result. So it goes home, away, home for the higher seed. So Galaxy hosts the first leg that we just talked about. Colorado Rapids are hosting the second game, and then if necessary, the third game will be back at Dignity Health Sports Park. There is no extra time, and every single game will have a winner as well. So if we are tied at the end of 90 minutes, we go to a penalty kick shootout, and that then determines the winner. So, Mark, to point out, if we're given some hope here, Colorado Rapids come out slightly defensive position like we saw in those final two games of Leagues Cup at Club America, at Dignity Health Sports Park, at Philadelphia Union. And they come out, they be a little bit defensive, try to play in transition as well. And then even whether they're playing for it or not, if they go to, if they get to a draw at the end of full time, Mark, Zach Steffen could make a save and they could win it in penalties. And then effectively you come home and you win the game, the second leg at Dick's, either in PKs again or straight up in the 90 minutes as well. Colorado Rapids advance, even though technically that was a draw and then PKs and then just a win. And you'd think a third leg, you could go back and Galaxy could overtake them with a win as well. So that is the format structure, just to be entirely clear. So even if the Rapids lose this game, Mark, even if they lose 6-0, it's not, oh, the Rapids have to come back and beat the LA Galaxy by at least 6 goals. But so to your point, Mark, I think certainly I don't, this is not how Chris Armas is going to approach it. This is not the language that I think he is going to use or the players are going to use. But Mark, we've seen the Rapids come in and be defensive and grind out results even when it hasn't looked pretty, and then gotten the result ultimately in PK. So there is a scenario, Mark. I don't know that I'm predicting it to happen, where we see a Leagues Cup style performance from the Rapids. You would say on the whole of it, if a team was going to win it in 90 minutes, it was going to be the LA Galaxy, and then Zach Steffen does what he does in penalties, and they end up winning that game in PKs as well. But I think the format is something that I think is interesting, Mark. I asked Chris Armas what he thought about it in terms of planning, and he said that he preferred either the one or the three. He didn't really like the two-leg series. I sensed that was probably thinking that, oh, the higher seed doesn't necessarily have the same advantage that you would have. But at the very least, from a away standpoint, you can try and go there, get a draw, nick it in PKs, and then you come home, must win, you win the game, you advance. So it advantages the home team for the purposes of the third leg. If you're the away team thinking, let's go get a result on the win, then I think you look at it and you see it as a two-leg series, so it's not that bad. I think the one-game playoff, I think, is the simplest, Mark, because you're just focused on that game and getting that result, but it is a massive advantage, certainly for the home team, which the Rapids are not in this situation. Mark, we talked about this a little bit last week about the formatting and everything. How would you think from a coaching standpoint, do you handle this any differently, given it's not a must-win game, given that you've got the second leg at home and there's a third leg if you can match the first leg result?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough call. I mean, I think the only major difference here is that if you have a player who's not fully healthy, you don't rush him back because you know that you have another game. I think you made a really good point about playing really defensive, going into Carson and basically saying, you know, grind, you know, attack on the counter, do not concede, see if you can't nick a win here, or, you know, take it to overtime and win on PKs. That would be a really, really good way of doing this. You know, try and get a nil-nil. I don't think getting a nil-nil on Ricky Pooge and Gabriel Peck and Joseph Painsil is a good plan. But I do think coming in with a more defensive posture, making guys make those kind of like big effort, deep runs. I mean, I was the one who's complaining about not having enough possession against Austin. I don't think conceding possession to the Galaxy is going to win you the game either. But I think you definitely are trying to like hold the ball in the middle third of the park more than you are trying to make risky plays to break in the final third. So that would be my only tactical approach difference in the first game. Just be like a little bit more possession minded and also be really willing to try and play for a 0-0 or 1-1.
The one thing that I will say about this, Mark, is, you know, one of the things that I think makes the LA Galaxy potentially not a contender or a favorite for MLS Cup is certainly their defense. In games that they've gotten results, they've had to outscore their opponents. They had to try and outscore Houston Dynamo the other night on decision day, and they were ultimately unsuccessful. So yes, like, if the Rapids have a bad 10 minutes, Ricky Pooge, Gabriel Peck, Joseph Painsil, they could put a 3 spot up on you as well. But at the same time, Mark, I still don't trust this defense. You know, John McCarthy, yes, he had his moment in the sun for LAFC, stopping some penalties against Philadelphia to win MLS Cup. I do like Maya Yoshida, the center back that they have from Japan. I think they're Japanese. Him and Yamane, I don't think they're South Korean. They're Japanese. Mark's nodding. They're Samurai Blue. But, you know, this is a defense that can't switch off and be had, Mark. This is a defense that is weak on set pieces. Granted, if you don't have Georgi Mihailovic in there to take the corners, the direct free kicks, the indirect free kicks, that probably lessens that potential advantage. But I'm going to disagree with you, where I think the advantage in this first leg, given that all the expectation, all the pressure is on the Galaxy. Galaxy also aren't coming off of a good result, given that they fumbled away home field advantage in a potential Western Conference final, El Trafico as well. You can go there and Galaxy, you're going to be expected to have the ball. And Mark, I'm not sure what we're getting from a crowd standpoint, because I don't know if you've heard this, Rabbi, but the Los Angeles Dodgers are in the World Series against the Yankees, and the second game of the World Series is going to be at Dodgers Stadium on Saturday as well. And I think it's a 5:08 kickoff time. So there's no way you can go to both games, Mark. I suppose you could see three innings maybe of the Dodgers game, and then maybe get to Carson to see the final 30 minutes of this game as well. So I'm wondering, from a sports standpoint, how much actual, you know, are the Galaxy second or third banana? Maybe the Lakers have a game. I know USC football has been down. So I don't know what that even that crowd's going to look like. So, you know, Mark, to your point, I don't know what the crowd was like for the game that you saw when you went to that Galaxy home game, but the Diggity, when it's sold out and it's 25,000 plus and the Upper Bowl's full and there's people on the grass berm as well, is a really different atmosphere to kind of a lackluster performance from the Galaxy. And there's like 17, 18,000 people, given how big the stadium is and how maybe not rowdy some LA Galaxy fans are. So I could totally see the Rapids come in, press the heck out of the Galaxy, make it a midfield trench warfare kind of game. Just have Connor Rohn and Ollie LaRoz run as much as they can, concede the ball to the Galaxy, force them to play in possession, and then try to do stuff on counterattacks, and then force them into set pieces, defending set pieces, which are going to make them inherently nervous as well. Like, I think that situation actually plays in really, really well for the Rapids. And the fact that that potentially compounds to you getting to penalties and having to deal with Zach Steffen with his form and what he was able to do in League's Cup. And then if you fumble that, the Rapids just need to win back at home. You know, there's a scenario where the Rapids get a result and there's no way for the LA Galaxy to be like, oh, well, we're always going to come back to our home stadium. And if we get a result, then we're going to be okay as well. So I think you can see possession as well. I think these two legs, regardless of what the result is from the first leg and what that means for the second leg, are going to be the exact same game plan, but for it's going to be flipped for the two teams depending on who's away and who's on the road. I think the Rapids are going to press and concede the ball to the LA Galaxy and try to do things in transition. And I think similarly, Galaxy are going to come to Dick's Sporting Goods Park, try to not run as much at altitude, and then try to do stuff in transition, replicate what they did a couple weeks ago when they won 3-1 with that third goal coming in stoppage time as well. Mark, let's talk about that weakness and what the Rapids do there, because transition play has been something that the Rapids have struggled with at times. And we talked about not having Moise Bumbito, not having Cole Bassett, and what that means here. Do you have any better sense of how the Rapids stop the Galaxy, or it's just don't have a really bad 10-minute period where you switch off mentally and two world-class players who should be playing in Europe burn you?
For me, there's been a lot of like weakness at the defensive midfield positions. They've been asked to do a lot of things in kind of tandem where one of them kind of sat back and the other one was moving forward. I think they need to go old school Mastronaccio. They need to sit the two defensive midfielders. That's the Pablo Mastroeni, Catenaccio mashup that was created like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago by Rapids fans. You need to sit both of your defensive midfielders as shields in front of that back line and really mark very closely the best attackers of the opposing team. So that's cut off Ricky Puig. That's sit on Gabriel Pack and let somebody else float out and deal with Paintsil. Another thing that would be really important here, it's really interesting to watch in this game. Reggie Cannon was playing really high as a defender, and the opposing players from Austin would make a couple of passes and cut him out. That's an interesting thing to watch of like, where are the fullbacks playing? How are the fullbacks playing? Are Sam Vines and Reggie Cannon going to be on the field? And are they going to be able to handle things? Are they going to be maybe switching Cannon over to the left side in this next match and having Keegan Rosenberry go at right back? Those have been some really interesting things we've watched over the last couple of weeks, where there's been a fair amount of mixing and matching with Sebastian Anderson also kind of coming in. I think overall, the Rapids need to have a clearer idea of the roles that the defense, that the fullbacks are going to play. And moreover, they're going to need to know who the fullbacks are. Like, I don't actually have a good sense of who the Rapids think their best right back and left back are right now, or what their primary roles are. And that's been a bit concerning for the last 8 weeks.
That kind of leads into, I think, a really good question, Mark, where the Rapids haven't had a whole lot of injuries this season. And then also, with the exception of a few positions, for the most part, whoever's available and playing well has been playing well. The previous game has been the one that started. I remember, Mark, when Anthony Hudson was throwing poop at the wall and, you know, the Rapids had a really long injury list, it was useful for us for previewing games to predict our lineup. And I don't know that that's been even necessary in terms of in terms of Chris Armas's first year at the club. It's mostly been who's in the double pivot next to Cole Bassett, and then basically which one of the wingers that we like. And we've been pretty open about the wingers that we've liked throughout the year. But I think it's worthwhile right now, Mark, for us to think what we think the lineup's going to be, especially given the injuries. So I've been thinking about that for a few minutes. I'll go now, and then I'll throw it to you. I think it has to be Zach Steffen in goal. There's no way you're throwing out Adam Beaudry in his second ever competitive first team or competitive first division game, have it be a must-win playoff game, certainly. I think you're sticking with the 4-2-3-1. I think it's Reggie Cannon. I like him better in terms of speed preventing marking Gabriel Peck individually, but then also contributing from an offensive standpoint. Sam Vines is still kind of coming back from injury, and I don't know that he's been as good as Reggie Cannon's been. It's Maxu and Lawless in goal, or excuse me, at center back. It's Keegan Rosenberry at the right back position. I would go Ollie and Ronan in midfield in the double pivot, even though that's been a concern. We're going to assume Georgie's unavailable, Mark. I am starting Cole Bassett at the 10 and having him go until the legs run off. Obviously, it's Hoffa up to not as well. Mark, I think you and I are at this point, like, the even with Omir scoring, and yes, it's great that he did, like, Calvin Harris should be the starter at the right winger position. I'm starting Jonathan Lewis on the left, and the reason why I'm doing that, Mark, is I think unless the game's absolutely gone, and even then, if it's 3-0, regardless of who's up 3-0 in the 70th minute, I still think the team that's down is going to be trying to do something. So I think eventually at some point in the second half, this game is going to go bonkers, MLS After Dark, just being extremely, extremely stretched. So while it would be nice to put the fear of God into the fullbacks of LA Galaxy fans and LA Galaxy fullbacks to have Kevin Cabral back and starting, and oh, he's back. And remember the last time he was here, he scored a goal and, you know, had it tied 1-1, even though the Rapids had been absolutely crap for the first 20 minutes of that game. I want him off the bench when Galaxy players are already tired, he's fully fresh, and when the game gets stretched. So that's going to be a little bit of a judgment call of, does that happen at 60 minutes? Does that happen at 75? Is he only playing 10 minutes? As soon as we go bonkers back and forth MLS, just wide open, anything goes in anything, take off Jonathan Lewis, throw on Kevin Cabral, and just let the impending doom and schadenfreude and the looming, the anxiety around the looming sort of Damocles filter in to the gray matter of LA Galaxy fans and LA Galaxy players, and especially into Greg Vanney on the sideline. Mark, that's my lineup. What changes do you have? What would you do if you were Armas?
I mean, I think Kevin Cabral over Jonathan Lewis is the only change I would make there. Although I could make an argument for Kevin Cabral over Calvin Harris too. Just that, like, the production has been like spotty from both of them, which is pretty normal for wingers. That's just a thing that happens, and I'm okay with it. But yeah, you've pretty much nailed it. There are not a lot of other options to play at the 10. There's not a lot of guys who've gotten run out at the 10 this last year and have shown that they can do it. There's a universe where you play like Connor Ronan there and Cole Bassett sits back at the kind of deeper. And you play Connor Ronan as kind of like a more defensive midfielder minded forward playing player, which is like you're basically inverting the roles. But I don't think they're going to do that. So it's fun to talk about, but it's not like actually going to happen. So that's what's going to happen. You've nailed it in terms of lineups. I feel good about that lineup. It's probably our best lineup. It still feels like a reach to try and go out and win this game.
I guess on that note, Mark, we want to do predictions.
I think the Rapids are going to lose this one 2-0. And thankfully, because aggregate score doesn't matter, they could lose this one 4-0 and it wouldn't matter. They still just have to go back and win it in Commerce City. What do you think, Matt?
I think this is a 2-1 game for the LA Galaxy, to be clear. I don't know how they have the offensive firepower to keep up with the Galaxy if Georgi Mihailović isn't available at all in this game, Mark. And I think Galaxy know if they win this, I think Galaxy have to be thinking from an analytics standpoint. They win this game in the 90 minutes. It's going to be pretty, pretty hard for the Rapids to overcome and advance in this series. So I think we see a Galaxy team that bounces back and responds and understands the seriousness given what they were not able to do at Houston on decision day, and they end up seeing out the result. I do think this will be the best performance of the three games so far that Rapids will have played against the LA Galaxy. That leg that they played, I think this was in July, right before the third Rocky Mountain Cup game. They rotated the squad a little bit. It didn't really work. They were playing from behind in the first half, but the second half was better. I do think the first half of the first like 60 minutes for the home leg was certainly better as well. So I'll say this is the best and the closest performance we see from the Rapids, albeit the best first team squad that's available given the injuries. Mark, shall we close things out with some Ask HDHLs?
Happy to do it.
The Rapids had a forward who's from New York originally and was playing for a reserve team, FC Nuremberg's reserve team in Germany. His name is Malik Sonogo, and he's a Rapids 2 trialist who has been with the first team. He was at training today, and he's a 6-1 forward, a possible option. Again, Rapids 2 trialist, not potentially competing to take Darren Yapi's job next year. So that's an option, albeit at striker. But I think those are the three positions, Eric. I think they use at least one international roster slot on those three signings. If they're making all three of them, I think absolutely one of those goes to the U22 slot. And it might be a wait and see on draft day, depending on if they're able to move up or if there's a player that they really like, or if somebody signs a last second generation Adidas deal and then becomes available in the draft for a really, really good sweetheart deal. Mark, I will throw our other Ask HDHL to you. This email comes from Matthew Cleveland. Matthew, hello. Hey guys, thanks for all the coverage you two have provided throughout the season. It is much appreciated. You're welcome, Matthew. Question, how much should we have expected this end of year slump? The Red Bulls teams that Marsh Armas had were famous for slumping at the end of the season and not doing much in the playoffs. Our pressing style is less intense than that. But with the Leagues Cup run, we might have made it to the same exhausting point. Anyways, should we expect it next year too? Rabbi, thoughts?
So it's a great point. I think Matt actually almost answers his question, which is, I don't think it's the press that's been doing this. This team presses a little bit more than your average team, but not so much more. And I think I made this point a couple weeks ago, which is all the teams in the league are playing a lot of minutes. They're all tired at the end of the season equally. There are some teams that overuse certain players and have less bench depth than others. And I think that is an issue that the Rapids have to contend with, which is they don't have as many players off the bench who contribute as many minutes. There are certain positions that aren't going to feel it as bad, goalkeeper, center back, because they just don't run as much. But if you're going to ask the question, is Cole Bassett, who's run more miles than any player in the league, are his legs going to be slightly heavier this time of year than the rest of the players in the league? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And I think there are some other issues at play. The amount of travel that the Rapids have to go in by comparison to like East Coast and West Coast teams, like the California teams, they just go up and down the coast a little bit. You know, they've got a lot more local games. The Rapids have to travel a lot. There is a counter argument there, of course, with altitude, which is because the Rapids train at altitude, they're awash in healthy red blood cells, and that is of benefit to them. But I think overall, my major belief in why these Rapids are slumping at the end of the season is probably twofold. One, the sale of Moise Bombito kind of downgraded the overall quality of the team. I guess two would be a failure to restock at the trade deadline. They just didn't, you know, it was Reggie Cannon or bust. That was the only move the team made. And the third major issue is just they probably were either overachieving a little bit all season, or they were just a very good team, but not an elite level team. And so the end of the season meant that they were kind of slumping in ways that non-elite teams will do. The top teams in the league in both the East and the West Conference are ending the season on high notes, and that's why the big four teams going into the playoffs were the same four teams at the beginning of the season that everybody thought was going to make big waves. That's LA Galaxy, LAFC, Columbus Crew, Inter Miami.
This probably should have been a banter topic, Mark, but one of our friends from No One Good FC, Keith, from Team MBS Media brought this up, Mark. I don't know if you saw, Rabbi, the report that MLS starting after 2026, when the U.S. hosts the World Cup, is potentially looking at a Clausura, Apertura, fall and spring style structure. I don't know that they've thought a whole lot about this on details wise, or I don't know that we have a lot of details on what that would look like. You know, is that, are we Are we playing the calendar year is still the structure mark, or are we going to the full European calendar? Your general initial thoughts on this? I think if we're avoiding, if we're keeping the season, but then splitting it into almost two regular seasons, like how the old NASL did it, and then from a playoff standpoint, I'm okay. If we're playing through the rest of winter, I don't think that's conducive given the competition that we'd be having with the NHL, NBA, and NFL from a media standpoint. And Mark, I'm not looking forward to having two or three Snow Classicos a year.
I mean, for me, the ideal setup is a dropping Leagues Cup and going to a regular league schedule.
Yes.
But I don't mind the idea of a Apertura Clausura kind of situation. And I do think that doing them kind of like fall, spring, and aligning them with Mexico, ultimately leading to a future in which the MLS and Liga MX basically are kind of like a four division AFC North, South, East, West style joint league where we're kind of like all playing together. That would be my ultimate favorite thing. I think one of the other things that I noticed this last year, you know, an orthodoxy in, and this is a slight departure, but I just want to bring it up. An orthodoxy in soccer leagues, especially in England, is everybody has to play everybody home and away in the league. And that's just how it works. That's why the championship has more games than the premiership, because they all have to play one game home, one game away. Well, Champions League's not doing that this year. Champions League dropped their whole group format, and there's like, I think like 36 teams, and they're playing 8 games, and they're not playing home and away against everybody. They're playing, I think, 12 games or 10 games or something like that. They're playing a home game and an away game. And they're divvied up by pots. So basically, like, you'll play one team in like the highest, you know, level, one team in the second, one team in the third, one team in the fourth, and they're all equivalent, which means like, you know, Bruges and the team from Prague are like sit both in pot four, and therefore you'll only play one of them. You won't play both of them. Anyways, I think you could do that with Mexico and the US, especially if you align the schedules. So that's my take. But I like going back to, I don't mind the way it was. I like playing through the summer. So if MLS went to a Clausura and Apertura where they started a little earlier than the Mexicans do, which is like they'd start in July, and they'd had to take a long winter break because our winters are tougher. And then they really got going again for the Clausura in like February. They played February, March, April, May, and maybe like a week into June. I'd be okay with that. That'd be fine with me. You know, it wouldn't be that different than the way it is now. It would just mean we take off in July, which we kind of already do anyways with all of the international break stuff and the Leagues Cup anyhow.
This would totally upend my ski schedule, Mark, but also it would free up stuff for way more camping and backpacking and hiking stuff in the summer. So some give and some take. At least one guaranteed Snow Classico a year, Mark, would definitely be type 2 fun, but it'd be more Snow Classicos, which would be fun on social media, not fun if you are trying to live tweet games from a open air press box that we designed for a stadium that was playing mostly home games in the middle of the summer. Rabbi, shall we land this plane?
I am wiped. I'm ready to go to bed so I can get up tomorrow and go lead services for a Jewish holiday called Shmini Atzeret, our most obscure holiday of the entire year. Bonus points to Rapids fans if they can tell me what Shmini Atzeret is.
Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMetPollard, and at @Rapids96podcast. Email us at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com if you know what that Jewish word phrase that Mark just mentioned, or if you want to send us a long form Ask HDHL like Matthew Cleveland did. You can also send us your questions on social media by using the hashtag AskHDHL. We're mostly on Twitter, we're occasionally on Facebook as well. We'll get to Blue Sky eventually. I don't know. Mark, are we almost out on Twitter? Like, it's becoming a unhinged hellscape. That might be a question for us to revisit once we know the outcome of the upcoming
election.
I spent a lot more time
on Reddit. I'm enjoying the Reddit world, and I recommend you spend some time on Rapids Reddit. It's a nice bunch of folk.
Do we need our own? Does HTHL need its own subreddit? I feel like that'd be a good place for.
We're not quite there yet. We're just gonna lurk in the Rapids Reddit.
Okay. Yes. Check out Reddit. Find out. Yeah. Email us if you think you figured out the mostly anonymous Reddit user profile names that Mark and I use to lurk on the Rapid subreddit and occasionally post on as well. Check out Mark's written work at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can become a paid Highliner and also get some more merch as well. Most of my written work is at burgundywave.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and tell Alex Aldrich about us, because apparently he had not previously listened to Holding the Highline prior today. And check out our sponsor, Magic Mind. Use the code Highliner20 at checkout to get a discount off of your first order with them. Listeners, we'll see you next week to preview the first Rapids home playoff game since Pittsgiving 2021.
Peace.